Hey there, Elizabeth.
Hey, Sheila. So we've been friends for what, nearly 14 years now?
I think about that. Yeah, although we've been really good friends for about half of that, but that's kind of a part of our story, isn't it?
It is. Well, at least for now, we're really good friends in large part because we've learned to be honest with each other. But it's not always perfect. Nevertheless, we're learning a lot by being imperfectly honest and thought you might too.
The Imperfectly Honest podcast is for informational, educational, and entertainment purposes only. This podcast does not provide medical advice and is not intended as a substitute for the diagnosis and treatment provided by a licensed, trained physician, psychotherapist, or other health professional. This podcast expresses the individual opinions of Elizabeth, Sheila, and their guests and does not constitute professional medical or mental health services. In sharing their experiences, names, places, and other identifying information may be changed to protect the privacy of the people involved. There, Elizabeth.
Hey Sheila, how are you?
I'm well. How are you doing?
I'm good. I won't tell you how the weather is because we always seem to start with that, and I'm ready to mix things up a bit.
We are mixing things up a little bit today, for sure.
We are. Why don't you tell us more about that?
Okay, I'm going to lay a little bit of the groundwork. So, the impetus for this episode, which I think we're up to episode 25, which kind of boggles my mind a little bit. So, Elizabeth, as you well know, you wrote it, an imperfectly honest blog post, which the title was Why I Don't Apologize for Unanswered Emails. And one of Elizabeth's colleagues, Jimmy Calano, read it and he wrote a follow-up email response, very fortuitous for the subject matter, and he expressed different opinions from what was in that blog post. There were valid points in both of what they expressed, and so Elizabeth and I thought this could be a really interesting podcast to invite Jimmy on and for the two of them, with maybe a little bit of a mix, if I have a thought, to just further discuss what both of their opinions were. The background of Elizabeth, as some of our listeners know, but just in case somebody's new, Elizabeth's an entrepreneur and investor, and most recently the co-founder, chief investment officer of the Merge Lane Venture Fund. And Jimmy, let me just first welcome you. Thank you for joining us. Excited to have you here. Jimmy is a former founder, CEO of a global training company, and more recently, the facilitator of the Boulder Investment Group. And I guess what's most relevant about that is that group has 935 members who email regularly. And as Jimmy has expressed, they expect a reply. So that kind of sets the groundwork for their backgrounds. And then just a little bit more to tee it up, I offered to summarize each of their positions from their writings. So here's Elizabeth's. Elizabeth doesn't like to follow the expectation of a 24-hour email response time, and she prefers not to work with those who believe in this unwritten rule. She asks two things of colleagues regarding email. First, that they not apologize for response delays, and if they don't feel they would provide a helpful response or actually even lack a desire to do so, that they just send a quick note kind of explaining those thoughts. Jimmy, on the other hand, even though he receives a very high volume of emails which require a response, he's made it a rule to respond within either 24 seconds, 24 minutes, or 24 hours, depending on his workload and his traveling commitments. His own ability to follow this rule of 24 has led him to conclude that those who don't reciprocate in that manner may have out of control professional lives or could be irresponsible and rude. And just that final note about apologies, Jimmy actually likes getting an apology for a response delay, both for the acknowledgement and for the fact that it humanizes the sender. Having, as I said, teed it up for you guys, I'm going to hand it off to our guest, Jimmy, to get this going, perhaps by first sharing his thoughts on why this issue resonated with him enough to send that email.
All right. Well, first, thank you for hosting me and allowing me to share my thoughts. I'm a regular listener of the podcast, get a lot of value out of it. But this one rubbed me a little bit and prompted me to reply. And I've subsequently asked myself, well, what's behind my aversion to unresponsiveness, and what is the underlying mindset of someone who just sometimes responds, sometimes doesn't? And I came to the conclusion that some people just don't pay consistent attention to email. I've had people almost proudly brag to me, I have 1,200 unread emails in my inbox, as though they're proud of it. And we've all glanced over someone's shoulder at their phone or their iPad and seen, a badge that shows 300 or 3,862 unread emails. And I also I view it as a cop out if somebody uses travel or a project as an excuse to just completely ignore emails as a never respond. So that's some of what was behind my emailing back to both of you.
Well, I so appreciate that you took the time to do that because it made me think a little bit more deeply about my thoughts. And Jimmy, I hope it's all right for me to share, but I think one of the things that makes this conversation more interesting is that I have a number of investors and other stakeholders involved with my fund who, like you, expect a response. And you are actually one of those investors. And so I just really appreciate the opportunity to have an open conversation with this, especially given that dynamic.
Can I also just elaborate a little bit? Because when I
Sure.
first listened to the podcast, I thought, oh, hey, wait a minute. How can you be so blasé about emails when I am religious about answering them? I'm OCD and you can't be bothered sometimes. I have a problem with that because I built part of my reputation on being responsive. So I blanch when others just don't deem it essential or justify not having to be responsive. And I first introduced that 24-24-24 strategy in a talk I gave a few years ago, and several attendees have subsequently circled back and told me it really changed their approach to email. It made sense to them. And in fairness to Elizabeth's stance, there's an exception. If you're trying to phase out work and receive fewer emails, I suppose taking your sweet time will send that message. And of course, if people keep pestering you, even if after you tell them no thanks, not interested, then being unresponsive is certainly fair game.
Yeah, I appreciate those thoughts. And I'd like to share a little bit about how I came to having this stance. So, I, like you, Jimmy, I like to be responsive. I like to have the reputation that I'm responsible and that I cross my T's and dot my I's. And I like people with whom I have a relationship to feel as if I value that relationship. And so, subsequently, until about 5 years ago, I responded to most emails within 24 hours. And I responded to nearly every entrepreneur who reached out to me looking for investment. That's often the highest volume of emails that I get is entrepreneurs looking for investment. And I felt proud of that. And a couple things happened as a result. I started getting feedback that being available to give my perspective that required deep thought was really valuable, and that I often gave feedback that other people were either afraid to give or they didn't see what I was seeing and were unable to give that feedback. And I started to figure out that that was really my gift and how I could be most helpful to my network. And in being able to do that, I need to, or at least I perceive myself as needing to spend some time in deep work without distractions, thinking through things, seeing different perspectives, writing, etc. And I just wasn't able to find the headspace or the time in the day to do that when I was answering all of those emails. The second thing that happened to me is that I took pride in my ability to respond to people that needed a little bit of help. I remember when I first started my career, actually, Jimmy, I'm going to use you as the example because when I was in college, I was interning for a company, and we had this group project for our marketing class in college. And I used that company that I was interning for as a example for this project. And I won't go into the weeds too much, but we were tasked with reaching out to people who were prospective members for this company that was a luxury travel company. And your name came up, and you answered an email, either from me or from one of my classmates, and granted some of your time to spend with me, a no-name college student, to help me out. And I still remember that, and it was a marked moment in my career. I ended up working with that company. It was my first experience with a startup, and it's why I got into venture capital. And you taking an hour of your time made a difference in that. And so I wanted to pay it forward and do that for people too. And it got to the volume that I just wasn't able to fulfill that. And I had this kind of straw that broke the camel's back moment in which my husband was having elbow surgery, and I missed a really important appointment in leading up to that. And it was very important to him that I was there. And I missed it because I was having coffee with an entrepreneur and just spaced it. I was trying to give back to that entrepreneur. And I realized in that moment that I had my priorities out of check. While I do like giving back, I think that there's a limit in that. And this is a long-winded way of saying that I decided two things. One, that I have a gift that requires me to do some deep work in order to give that gift, and that email distracts me from being able to give that gift at the level that I want to. And that two, I have to pick and choose who I can be responsive to, and that I can't be responsive to everyone in my inbox and be able to uphold my priorities.
Okay, that's fair. Sheila, I'm not quite ready to ask you to referee,
Okay, no. I do have some thoughts, but go ahead. No, no, no.
let me just give a little bit of the contrast. I mean, once you take the time to explain that, it's like, oh, okay, I get it. Yeah, I'd probably do the same in that situation, but you don't have the time to tell everyone who you're ignoring that that's why. And here's some notes that came to me or that I jotted down about what happens when you ignore email. And I don't mean you necessarily, Elizabeth. I just mean people in general. First of all, okay, you make associates, family, and friends wait. In a business context, you imply that you don't really care about the issue or even my proposed solution. I mean, that's kind of what silence does. You can jam up the communication flow and waste others' time. It often triggers multiple resends to put an email back at the top of your inbox. And it sends a message that maybe what I need to say isn't that important to you. And a potential consequence is that you lose respect from consequential people who then maybe chide you behind your back. I mean, I've been told, and I've said this too many times to count about other people. Oh yeah, he or she terrible with email. Text them, call them. Email isn't going to work. And I'll close this segment with an observation, which is, I found people who are super present, really charismatic, often the person showcased in a setting, are great at one-on-one, and often lousy at email because they're kind of too busy being in the center of attention and being so present for other people. Just something I've observed. So, how about Sheila, maybe you weigh in?
Well, actually, there was just one point I wanted to make because I was fascinated by Elizabeth's example. for when she was an intern and she reached out to you and got so much from the fact that you actually took a large amount of time and responded, and she still remembers it to this day. And I was just thinking, if you were the kind of person who couldn't respond to every email, I'm thinking her email, I assume you didn't know each other, you were just a student, like that could have just fallen by the wayside. And then that experience would never have happened. So I think that's what kind of was ringing a bell in my head as I was listening.
I try to say yes whenever I can. I mean, sometimes, I'm out of town or I'm just slammed, but I've been mentoring CU students for well over a couple decades, so that was something I was more inclined to say yes to, and it's led to a decades-long friendship with Elizabeth, actually, and in a business relationship as well.
Well, and I do think about that of what am I missing in my inbox? And I'm sure that I'm missing some things, but I think I try to remember that for every yes, there is a no, because we don't have infinite time, unfortunately. The other thing, too, is I think it depends a little bit on each individual as well. For me, I know that it takes me more time than the average person to respond to email. I actually have a difficult time focusing enough to quickly respond to email. It's kind of my mind is in many ways my best asset, but it's also one of my biggest challenges because my mind is always going in a bunch of different directions, which allows me to see perspectives that other people don't see. It's really my gift, but it makes it more difficult for me to do simple things like respond to emails. As just one example, my executive assistant often takes on things like some work that I need to do in Excel spreadsheets because she can do it in about a fourth of the time as I can. And it's not really a learning curve from my experience because I've been working on it for 20 years and it doesn't seem to improve. It's more just I've accepted that part of me.
Well, you always give very thoughtful replies, so I know that you just don't fire things off. You think before you write and hit send.
Well, I
I
appreciate
would agree.
that. And I would say the same to the both of you, actually. You often are the most thoughtful responses that I receive. And you guys are both often the most responsive people that I interact with. So it's interesting to have you both on this call. And I would actually be curious to ask both of you how much time you think you spend responding to emails on average each day.
Well, I don't get that many emails. I actually never really have in my career. It was more hands-on, direct service, and all that. So I am very much an outsider looking into this conversation, except for just kind of the basic human points that come out. I don't know that I've ever struggled with the volume of emails that it sounds like both of you have had to handle. So I don't know that my experience can add to this conversation. So I'm going to hand it over to Jimmy to answer it.
I would say 50 to 70% of my workday I spend responding to email. And I'm always perplexed when people like my son talk about, what an intrusion email is. He doesn't say that so much anymore. But I think to myself, that's what I do for a living, whether it's investing, whether it's running my small family office, whether it's just doing life. It's pretty much all done via email, and the silver lining is that my phone hardly ever rings, so I'm not wasting hours of the day on the phone as I did, 20 years ago, or 30 years ago for that matter, during my days as a CEO. So when I'm doing email, I feel like, well, I'm working. This is how I'm communicating. This is how I'm making investment decisions. This is how I'm doing research, getting input, getting back to others. So yeah, I'm perfectly good with it too. How about you, Elizabeth?
So I would say 5 years ago, 80% of my time was spent on email. And I would say now, maybe 10%. And in fairness, I'm in a different
point in my career. So we are no longer investing through our fund. And so the inbound inquiries that I'm getting for investment are less interesting to me than they were before. It's not to say that there aren't opportunities in there that I'm giving up. I'm sure there are for me personally and just for other people in my world. But I'm spending, I would say, more than 50% in what I view as my zone of genius, which is seeing the challenges that people in my portfolio and people in my network are facing, and reflecting both through my own experiences and also through some of the things that I'm seeing, because I'm very good at seeing patterns that other people don't see, reflecting those thoughts to them in a way that's helpful.
So I'm just going to interject because I'm seeing similarities, really, just differences in maybe the communication style, because, and maybe I'm hearing wrong, but I feel like Jimmy's reflected that he does that a lot of the time and enjoys it, but it's via emails versus Elizabeth, having known you for how many years. I know you're still like you like the phone calls, like especially if you're hiking or walking or whatever, you know, movement, phone calls, which, you know, email doesn't lend itself to. You can't really kind of do both of those at the same time, but you're still, as you say, contributing your zone of genius to a dialogue with somebody else in that kind of forum. So I don't know. Is that something that sounds right to both of you, or maybe not?
Can I just hitchhike on that? The one time I like to talk on the phone actually is when I'm on my life cycle, sometime between 8 and 9 in the morning. And if you call me then, boy, I'm going to answer for sure, and I'll be a chatty Cathy. And the one line I've used ad nauseum is, "I'm breathing heavy. It's not you. I'm working out at the time."
Yeah,
I love it.
Well, maybe I'll call you between 8 and 9 now that I know that. That's helpful to know.
Well, and I deliberately email you either late at night or very early in the morning because you once told me that you wake up in the middle of the night and sometimes do an hour of work or email from like 3 to 4, and then you often get up again really early, 5:30 or 6. And I know that if I just strategically place that email in your inbox around that time, I might get a super fast reply.
I appreciate that.
Yeah. So, because this is flying by this time, and there was the one issue that I don't know if either of you want to speak to where you disagreed about the apologies. How Elizabeth expressed she really doesn't like when people apologize for being kind of derelict in responding. And Jimmy said he really likes it.
Elizabeth, do you not like it or you just don't expect it and don't need it?
I actually don't like it. However, it may depend on the person now that I'm talking this through with you. So, because I know that email response time is something that you care so much about, then I might receive an apology from you differently than somebody else.
Okay. When I get an apology, when someone's, what's the expression, when someone, it feels like someone's ghosted me on email and they're like, "Oh, I was traveling or I had this or I had that or whatever." I'm like, "Oh, okay, thanks." I'm thinking to myself, "Now I know you're not a total flake."
Right. Well, let me give you a specific example that might better highlight why I don't like apologies. So, a friend of mine got invited to do this speaking opportunity abroad, and it was a once in a lifetime opportunity. She got a lot of business for her business. She learned a lot from the experience. She met some people that made a big difference in her life, and it was like a tr perhaps one of the most transformative weeks of her life. And I knew she was in this experience. And I sent her an email during that time, assuming that it would get her, that I would get a response sometime when she got back and had time to do it. Well, I sent her an email maybe at 2 in the afternoon on a Tuesday while she was at this experience. At 5 o'clock that afternoon, she responded and said, "I'm so sorry for my delayed response." And my reaction was, "Why on earth are you sorry? You're having this transformative experience. I am your friend. I want you to prioritize this personally and professionally transformative experience over my email. I trust that you're going to answer my email when this transformative experience is over."
So again, so that's why you like that led you to feel like apologies are just not something you want to expect from people or give yourself. Is that what I'm hearing?
I want to be in professional and personal relationships where we have an unwritten understanding that, or maybe a written understanding that we value each other's times. We want to get back to each other. And if we're having some sort of a transformative experience or something that we need to prioritize over an email response, that we will prioritize those things and we'll get back as soon as possible.
Very logical, makes sense to me.
And I appreciate that not all my friends may feel that way. So, Jimmy, with you, now that I know that you have these feelings, I'm glad that you shared them because I would like to prioritize responses to you. And I would like you to call me out if I don't do that, or if you're feeling like I'm deprioritizing you in a way that doesn't feel good.
My rule of thumb is, as long as I hear back from somebody within 24, to 36 hours, I'm good with that. It's when it goes on for days and there's just radio silence that I get a little perturbed. And there are times that I've resent an email and just said, "Are you okay? It's kind of unlike you to n not get back to me more readily." So.
Amazingly enough, we've almost been talking for 30 minutes. I guess the thoughts I kind of wanted to end with to from both of you, because in talking to people about the subject matter of this, in addition to the response time and the apology question, a few people actually gave what I considered really good advice for the sender to help the process, like to essentially help the person receiving the email to curate what they're sending. And I know both of you are excellent at that. We've actually kind of talked about that a little bit in this podcast. But a couple of the things, just really briefly, like they talked about the subject, making sure they have a really valid subject that explains what's in the body. And that goes a long way. And I think the other thing somebody brought up was don't put too many people on it. Like, if there's a lot of people in the two, even like more than two, this person I spoke to said, "I'm going to feel like I don't even have to address it because there's a crowd out there that can do it." So I'm just to close things up, if that's okay, throw it back at you guys for any more advice you could hand off to people who are sending you emails as to what they could do to kind of improve the experience for you.
I think subject lines are important, like you said. I will actually link to something in the show notes that's a list of suggestions on how to craft compelling emails. But I also just quickly want to add that sometimes the brevity and rate at which you respond to an email sends a more positive message than a negative one. So, as an example, as it relates to entrepreneurs seeking investment, it's a little bit like dating, in which when you play hard to get, sometimes it makes your company more appealing and it can give the impression that you're busy building your business rather than crafting the perfect email. And I do notice that sometimes when I ask a question as a due diligence question and I get a 4-page response to that one question, it's really more of a turn off than a turn on.
Yes, it's tragic when you ask someone what time it is and they just insist on telling you how to build a watch. If I can take my turn on this close here,
Sure.
I think of the individual who runs the company who I have my greatest investments with, and that's Bob Nichols of Monarch. He's got over 1,500 investors. He's a billionaire. He is got, I think, the number sixth multifamily general partnership firm in North America. And when I email Bob, well, two things. One, I never send him anything longer than 2 or 3 sentences because I know his time is really precious. And I just want to get right to the point, make the ask. And if Bob doesn't get back to you within minutes, it's certainly within an hour or two and never longer than the end of the day. And I think to myself, if Bob, and of course, I'm going to get often a one-word response or not more than a sentence or two. And the spelling isn't always perfect and the punctuation isn't always perfect, but man, is he responsive. And it's like, okay, if he can pull this off, what's my excuse?
Yeah, I think both of you have kind of expressed, in my opinion, just to close it up, different perspectives that have validity. And some of it sounds like, and you can correct me if I'm wrong, is your personal preferences and your personalities, really. Maybe not the ghosting part. Ghosting somebody with emails is never a good thing, but just the response time and the way the response comes at you does seem to reflect a little bit, in my opinion. I don't know you, Jimmy, but I know Elizabeth, your personalities, and I think we may all agree on that one.
Agreed.
Agree.
Okay, well, any final thoughts either of you want to express before we end this? I'm going to go to Jimmy first. What about you?
I've enjoyed participating in this exchange. I think we have a meeting of the minds. Elizabeth, I do respect your position now that I'm so much better understand it.
I appreciate that, and I feel the same. And I guess I just want to say in closing that if you ever are in the position where you have to give up something that's really important to you and that you want to prioritize, to answer my email quickly, that I'm hoping you won't do that. And on the flip side, because I know responsiveness is important to you, I'm actually excited about the challenge of being more responsive to your emails and look forward to doing that in the future.
All right, fair enough.
Well, this is great. So I enjoyed this. I'm so glad we did this topic. I really thank you again to Jimmy for joining us. And thank you for also giving us that plug that you're a listener, because yeah, we love to have listeners. So glad you're enjoying Imperfectly Honest. So I guess on that note, we'll say goodbye.
Bye, thank you.
Thank you and goodbye.
Bye.
The Imperfectly Honest podcast is for informational, educational, and entertainment purposes only. This podcast does not provide medical advice and is not intended as a substitute for the diagnosis and treatment provided by a licensed, trained physician, psychotherapist, or other health professional. Note that, notwithstanding that any of the guests on this podcast may be licensed professionals, no one on this podcast is providing or seeking to provide the listeners of this podcast with any medical or health services. You should not rely on the information or content presented during this podcast, and you should not make any health or medical-related decision based in whole or in part on such information. Consult a healthcare professional licensed in your state for all matters relating to your health, and do not disregard any medical advice, diagnosis, and/or treatment provided by your healthcare professional. This podcast expresses the individual opinions of Elizabeth, Sheila, and their guests, and does not constitute professional medical or mental health services. In sharing their experiences, names, places, and other identifying information may be changed to protect the privacy of the people involved.